Next speaker, Tom Elton, is a lifer and has done a lot of time inside, but a lot of time outside as well. And he's continues to be active in the struggle for prisoners' rights, and it's an honor to have him here today. And here he is, right behind me. I'm trying to move this without wrecking everybody's cables. Okay, how tall are you?
I'll pretend I'm a hunchback and the weight of time is okay. You got down to me, right? There we go.
Okay. Is that good?
That's good. Thank you, fellas. It's nice to see everybody out here again this year and some new faces as well. And before I start talking, I want to really give my regards to all of Claire's family, not just for constantly being there for us over the years and representing human rights in general and speaking for the people that are oppressed and suppressed, but for going to a more personal level and sharing their mother and grandmother with like 20,000 people. I mean, for those of us who have grown up in jail and didn't have any family except the person in the cell beside you or, you know, peeing on you from the top bunk, it's nice to know that you do have a mother or did have a mother that was there and thinking about you all the time and ready to stand at the gates of hell and scream and, you know, work for your benefit. So my regards to all of Claire's family and thank you so much for sharing her with us over the years. In 1975, I first became involved with prisoners' rights movements and really fighting in a coordinated manner against the authorities in Ocala. And I was about 17 years old then and, you know, on a road to nowhere and thinking that I was on the road to being something, right? It soon changed my mind when I realized that the yard I was in and the fact that we were refusing to go lock up meant that we were all being surrounded by people carrying shotguns and shields and big sticks. And there were about 60 or 70 of us up in the upper yard in Ocala at that point in time. And, you know, we had maybe 10 baseball bats and had the impression that we were going to fight off these coppers and, you know, make our stand and get some little changes and stuff like that and demands, right? And as you can imagine, as the hours progressed and the situation got a lot more tense and, you know, the realization sank in that we were all pretty well dead meat, unless we had some help. Claire and some other people from the prisoners' rights group appeared across the alley from the upper yard, and they were standing on some people's garage roofs, and they were yelling, and a helicopter came over the top of the prison and started filming, and, you know, it took a lot of the pressure off of the situation, right? What it meant was that the prison authorities for the first time realized that there were people outside that actually cared about the people inside and that they didn't have a free hand to do what they wanted, that they were going to be held responsible because there were people that were going to see what they were doing. And I think that's the first time that authorities actually treated me and everybody else that I knew in a somewhat civilized manner. They treated us as actual human beings rather than just numbers or fodder, right? That being the case, the leaders of our little sit-out or sit-in at that point in time, you know, did our time in the dungeon under the cow barn and got out and did the rest of our time becoming a little bit politically aware. And that movement grew over the years and, you know, joined hand in hand with the Rock Against Prisons and the National Prisons Rights Movement and, you know, the International Prisons Rights. August the 10th is not just Canada's prison rights movements or, you know, Prison Justice Day. It's shared in Australia, the UK, France, and a couple other countries as well. And I don't know if Claire was the result of that, but I do know that she lobbied with a lot of people that she knew worldwide to make this not just a Canadian trip, but a basic universal kind of thing. And while we sit out here today and we're talking about people on the sheets over there that, you know, are with us and aren't with us, there are people, you know, in other countries that are going hungry today and refusing to work, and they're probably being punished and suppressed and going through some hard times because of that, and all the strength to them. One of the things that I do really want to talk about today, I guess, is that while the number of peoples on those sheets grows year by year, a lot isn't being said about the families that get left behind, right? Every one of those names on that wall or those sheets leaves a family behind. That's somebody's mother, somebody's father, somebody's brother or uncle or daughter, right? And all too often we forget about the effects of the families that are left behind as well, right? I mean, each life lost there means that a whole family is basically destroyed. I don't think you ever get beyond the fact of losing somebody that you really love or somebody that's a part of you that you grow up with. A few of my friends have suicided over the years. I mean, you know, I've been doing this bit since 73. So, as Phyllis said, I'm doing a life sentence. So, my sentence doesn't finish until, you know, goddamn, my name goes up on that sheet too, which kind of sucks when you think about it, or when I think about it, right? But I don't know if there's an answer, right? You know, Claire believed in the total abolition of prisons, and also believe that some people did have to be incarcerated, right, until there was some kind of method to refrain them from breaking the social contract. I don't know about that. I don't have any answers. All I know is that, you know, the more inhumane the prison system is, the more that brutality is used to suppress a person and try and break them down and strip away their identities, the more that's coming back into society. The only way a person really survives long-term imprisonment is by becoming that environment, right? And that sense of brutality or that means of life gets transferred right out into their social skills that they bring out on the street. You know, you talk about prison transferable skills on the street, right? Job training. I hate to say it, but that's what gets brought out. And until the authorities, the administration, the government, and everybody gets it brought home to them by the petitions, by the letters, by direct action of some course or another, none of it really sinks in. Right, so everybody has to do what they can in some little way, you know, just by showing up to the rallies, by filing petitions, by spending, you know, 40 cents on a stamp, right? It's just got to happen. The wastage of human lives and human people and the potential that each of those people are and has been is just too much, right? And the loss to the families is just too great. It's too devastating. Right? And I really don't have a lot more to say except that, you know, it is the 30-year anniversary, and God hope that we don't have a 50-year anniversary, right? And thank you.